Good evening and welcome to Art Waves. I'm Bernadette Rule, and tonight my guest is Leo Dragto. Leo Dragto is a socialized, urbanized hermit, a dreamer living in a world of broken dreams. He's often referred to as a singer, songwriter, poet, and an artist. To the best of his knowledge, all of these labels are somewhat true. Each and every day, Leo makes a conscious effort to keep breathing. He tries his best to tie his shoes and chase down happiness in whatever form it may appear. No matter where he goes, Leo's heart and his home will always be in Hamilton, Ontario. Leo is very pleased to be here now, and he hopes you are too. Well, I certainly am. Welcome to Artways, Leo Dragto.
Hi.
Hi. You came to my attention at a celebration of Hamilton Arts and Letters' 11th anniversary at the Art Gallery of Hamilton, where you gave a beautiful poetry reading. I was most impressed. Would you mind reading us a poem to begin?
Absolutely. I'll start off with a poem called Boogie Street Minstrel, which is a poem, a tribute to Leonard Cohen. And I was fortunate enough to see him the last time he played in Hamilton. And this is the poem that came out of that experience. Boogie Street Minstrel. If there is a heaven, Leonard, you no doubt have stumbled upon it. Body kneeling like a twisted shoelace, skinny suit illuminated by a single strand of light. We breathe in time. Time inches forward, bending reverently at the heavy altar of an ageless longing. Within this place where love is free, the gates of mercy open wide for all to see. If there is a heaven, Leonard, you no doubt have tasted of its milk and honey. Waltzing through triumphant encores, tongue residing firmly in your cheek, like nothing in the world could be less bleak than this here life, this broken song where every breath becomes a tomb, becomes a farewell tour. Within this place where love is blind, the heart is pure, the spirit unconfined. If there is a heaven, Leonard, you no doubt have your arm about its waist. Skipping through these stages with the sweet abandon of a truant child, your golden voice still driving timid creatures wild, singing through these stages with the clear compassion of a summer rain, your golden voice still driving crazy creatures sane. Within this place where love is known, the gates of mercy open wide to call us home. And the angels are singing hallelujah.
Beautiful, beautifully read, Leo Dragto, and beautifully written. Is that one of the poems that was featured in HAL's issue 12.2, the Disability Poetics issue, Imaginary Safe House?
Yes, it was.
Okay. You know what struck me with you reading that? I should tell our listeners, we're doing this on Zoom during the COVID pandemic, so I can see Leo on my screen here. You were reading that without looking at the page much at all, so you obviously have it memorized. Is that something that is important to you in terms of your own poetics?
Kind of, yeah. I think the more that a poem starts to live and breathe and become something very real, the more it attaches itself to my memory, and it's just easier for me to just say it. It's not something that I try to do, but it's kind of happens as a natural consequence of the poem being alive and me reading it and thinking about it, and it just kind of organically becomes a part of my mind.
Wow. Well, I'm very impressed with that. I think I have maybe one of my poems memorized, and it was one I wrote when I was in my 20s. So, you know, at this point, there's no hope with that. But I really admire poets who can do that, because as you say, you said, I like to say it, meaning rather than read it, you sometimes it's called declaiming the poem. But your way with a poem, at least with this one, is very undramatic. It's beautifully read, but you're not, you know, like as I heard one poet say once, it's, I don't picture you on a cliffside with your long billowing sleeves in the wind, you know. You're not being a poet with a capital P. You are very much a poet, but you are not declaiming in that overdramatic sense, which I really appreciate.
Oh, thank you.
More powerful. How long have you been writing poetry, Leo Dragto?
I started writing in high school, which was quite a while ago now. I would say I've been writing poetry seriously for about, let's say, 17 years.
And was it an assignment that you in high school that you had to do?
No, it was actually, it was something that I was drawn to naturally, but I had the good fortune to have an English teacher in grade 11 whose name was Max Layton, who's the son of Irving Layton, who's a very well-known Canadian poet.
Oh.
And he became a good friend of mine. He still is to this day, and a huge influence. And so he was the person that kind of directed me towards poetry. And he said, you know, you really should write, and you really should take it seriously because, you know, it's a beautiful thing, and you should cultivate that ability. So it was kind of as a result of that. It was also from listening to music and lyrics, and just I've always loved rhythm. I'm very, very interested in rhythm, and poetry for me is a very rhythmic reality. Yeah. So I just love to be a part of it.
Yeah, that's fabulous. Well, you're also a singer-songwriter, so I guess the two worlds merge a little. We'll talk about that in a second, but I want to go back to Max Layton. Where did you go to high school?
I went to school at John Fraser Secondary School in Mississauga. This was quite a while ago now, and he was teaching English there. And I was in his class. I didn't know very much about his father's work at all, but my mom said, Max Layton, do you know who that is? And I said, no. And she said, oh, his dad was a very well-known Canadian poet. So,
yeah. Oh, that's really exciting. And we need mentors along the way, right? Yeah. And did you have other mentors who helped you and guided you, whether by you reading them or knowing them?
Well, my biggest mentor, and I am not ashamed to admit, is my mom. She always has been, was, and is a huge influence on my life. And I think she was the first person who sort of introduced me to poetry. When I was younger, I used to attend church and sing. We used to sing hymns a lot. And yeah. The hymns were very poetic and very beautiful in the lyric and the structure. And she always sort of nurtured that in me and always sort of cultivated this idea that words and rhythm and poetry are beautiful. And so it was something that I had always had inside. And then just being, you know, going to high school and being in that environment with somebody who was very conscious of words and their meaning and their weight, I think those two influences on me were huge and sort of led me down that path.
That's great. As a mother myself, I really love it when people give credit to moms. So do you want to tell us your mother's name?
My mother's name is Maya.
M-A-I-A?
M-A-A.
Can you spell it for me?
M-A-I-J-A.
Wow. Okay. That's a cool name. Well, yeah, wonderful that you've had that support and that direction that just people who just helped you take the right path. Let's talk a little bit about the fact that you're a lyricist, like a singer-songwriter, as well as a poet. How do you know when something is going to be a song versus when it's going to be a poem?
Well, that's a very good question, and I've been thinking quite a bit about it. It's in a way, it's very difficult because the line between lyric and poetry can sometimes be very thin. But I think what a lyric, when you add music to a poem, it gives it a certain exuberance and a certain excitement and a certain weight that you wouldn't otherwise have maybe if you just read words. So I think that a lyric, it's like any other art form. When you start to combine things, it enhances the power of what's happening. And so I feel like when you combine music with words, the power of the words is enhanced, and the music as well can be enhanced by the words because it gives the music another shade of meaning and feeling.
True, absolutely. So then would you, based on that, do you think it's fair to say that a poem needs to be stronger in its words than a lyric which has other things to lean on?
Possibly. I think that a poem that stands alone is a beautiful, beautiful thing because, like you say, there are no bells and whistles. There's nothing else that you can kind of add to it. So it has to be, the power of the piece has to be within itself, you know?
Yeah,
I would say that, but not necessarily.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting question. We could probably talk about it for the entire segment, you know, the poetry and lyric and how they are connected and all those types of things. But
well, I always remember years, this was back in the 70s. I really loved this one James Taylor song, and I think he was called Handyman. Yeah, it was Handyman. And I was talking to my sister-in-law about how much I loved this song, and she picked up the record. And she began reading the lyrics out to me. You know, I was like, I'll be your handyman. And she read them really flat.
Yeah.
We both laughed, but I was kind of privately insulted on James Taylor's behalf. But it really didn't hold up at all as a poem. And the words were so pedestrian and mundane. But with the pauses, the timing, I think, particularly that he put into the song, it made it so much more powerful. So yeah, it is a slightly different skill, I think. Now, let's stay with your songwriting for a minute. When you write a song, does the music come first or the lyric? How does that inspiration come to you?
It actually depends on the song. Sometimes, like, I've written poetry, and then a melody will find its way to the poem. And then other times, you know, you're sort of messing around with chords and tones, and then words come into play. So I think it depends on the song and it depends on the situation. Usually I start working with melody and then the words sort of come, but there have been some times when the words have been already written and the melodies come later.
Okay. When did you learn to, it's guitar you play, is that right?
Yeah, mainly guitar, yeah.
Okay, how did you learn to play guitar? Who taught you? When did you take that up?
Kind of around the same time that I started writing poetry, because I started, you know, listening to music and I had some songwriters that were a huge influence on me, and I just naturally started being curious about the guitar. I was lucky enough to have some guitars around the house at the time, so I just started playing them, I think. My dad taught me three chords, and when I was about 17, and then from that time, I just continued to go with it. I'm very much self-taught. I have no technical musical skill, but I love music and I love to play it. So that's kind of how it started.
Okay, so your dad plays guitar.
Yeah, he was a guitar player and a bass player. He was also self-taught. He was a very proficient musician.
Oh, what was your dad's name?
My dad's name is Roy.
Well, so you come by these things naturally through both your parents, it sounds like, these skills.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay, so where, besides in the latest issues of Hamilton Arts and Letters, which is an amazing online literary magazine I want to mention to people, so all you have to do is Google HA&L or write Hamilton Arts and Letters. It's Paul Lisson and Fiona Kinsella's baby, and it's absolutely wonderful thing, especially for Hamilton, but it's not limited to Hamilton. Where else can people find your work?
Well, at the moment, I don't have any poetry anywhere else. I'm in the process. I'm sort of organizing things. I want to self-publish something because I've got quite a few that I think are really fantastic, and I'd like to share them, and I think this whole COVID experience has got me thinking about the importance of sharing and getting things out there. So after a long time, I finally decided, well, I think I'll just self-publish. So that's in the works. Musically, my music, I just released an album in March, just before COVID happened. And wow. I'm very proud of it. It's all original work. The album's called Alive at Xyla's, and my good friend Nick Xyla produced and recorded it. And you can find that anywhere you stream music. So Spotify, Apple Music, iTunes, Google Play, whatever. Just look up Leo Dragtoe on there, and you will find Alive at Xyla's.
Okay, Alive at Xyla's. And can you spell Xyla's for me?
Yeah. Z-Y-L-A and an apostrophe S.
Oh, that's what I had. Excellent. Yep. Just like it sounds. I want to get you to read some more poetry for us, but let's talk a little bit about your album first. So Alive at Xyla's, and you can get it anywhere online, basically. Just Google Alive at Xyla's. So how many songs are on the CD?
Well, there are 9 songs. There are 10 tracks in total, and there are 9 songs on the CD.
Okay, amazing how prolific you are just this year. Like, things are kind of coming to a head for you.
It's been percolating for a while, and it just so happened that the momentum really started to pick up lately. So yeah, it's I'm not as prolific as I look or sound.
You look really prolific, I'm gonna tell you. Okay, so you've put out this CD before COVID and everything got closed, all the coffee houses and concert venues got closed. Were you going to open mics? Were you playing concerts? Were you anywhere around town?
Yeah, I had been actually for the last couple of years. I actually, I had a lot of struggles with getting my music out there and doing it. I was, believe it or not, a little apprehensive about it. I had a lot of anxiety about it. And just like 2 or 3 years ago, I started to seriously go to open mics around Hamilton. There were a lot. Hamilton is a great spot for that type of thing, for poetry, music, for art. So I just started doing that recently, and then one thing kind of led to another. So, you know, it just all kind of happened. And then the universe was like, nope, and just COVID shut everything down. So
it's all your fault, Dragtoe.
I know.
He brought us all down. Oh, I love it. Well, yeah, this whole COVID thing is so fascinating. Do you think this pandemic lockdown, do you think it has affected your art in any way?
It's affected me. And so by virtue of that, it's affected my art. It's forced me to, I've always been really thoughtful, a really thoughtful person, but it's kind of forced me to go a little bit deeper and to think a little bit harder about a lot of things. And we've all had to deal with isolation and that feeling of loneliness and that feeling of singularity. And so, you know, all of those things cause changes in the way you think and your perspective. I think one way that it's changed me, I'm more thankful for everything now. I'm more thankful for the opportunity even to do this, like we're doing right now. And even in any way, you know, to communicate and share with people is really an amazing, awesome thing that I think before COVID, I personally kind of took for granted. I was like, oh yeah, we'll just, you know, we'll do something next week or whatever. I'll play an open mic here, or I'll do a show here. I was making arrangements to do this and that and just thinking, okay, well, this is going to be great. And then all of a sudden, the fact that it stopped, you kind of, at least for me, I'm more thankful for the opportunities that I've had and that I'm having now, because they're not guaranteed.
That's the truth. Yeah. Nothing seems to be much guaranteed.
No.
So interesting. Okay. So will you read us another poem?
Absolutely. This one is a short poem, and it was actually written for Max Layton. And it was written, we were discussing the vulnerability of poetry and how to be a poet is a very vulnerable state. And so this poem is called Birds of a Feather. The only difference between strippers and poets is that strippers make more money.
Is that it?
That's it.
You know, it reminds me of a line from Leonard Cohen's The Tower of Song, where he's talking about prostituting himself with his voice. You know, he was born with the gift of the golden voice, and how he's prostituted himself to it. That's very interesting that you think of it in those terms. Sometimes a short poem can have incredible power, I think. Okay, do you have guidelines for yourself in terms of what you're aiming at with your poetry?
Well, for me, poetry, if I was going to define it quickly, I would say that it is the rhythm of the moment. And so for me, as a writer or as a poet, what I try to do when I write is to capture the rhythm of the moment that I'm in. And I know that's a little bit of a, you know, it's hard to define. It's a little nebulous, but that is my only guideline. When I write, I want to capture the rhythm of the moment. And I feel if I can do that properly, I'll know, and other people will know too, because when they hear it, there's a certain, when a poem is powerful, I feel like it has a certain timeless quality to it, because when you capture the rhythm of a specific moment or a series of moments, then every time you read the poem or every time you hear it, time just disappears. And so that's what I try to do. That's my guideline. That's my goal.
Fabulous. You know, I once heard that said about pop music. You can listen to a song and know immediately and feel again everything you were living through and feeling when you first heard that song, because Absolutely. It's little sponge that just takes in all that you're living at the moment, and then rings it out again every time you hear that song, so you're back there. Yeah, I think that's really true. What do you think writing poetry does for society? What do you think poetry does for society?
I think poetry is essential to society. I think poetry is like all forms of art, but poetry specifically gives perspective. Poetry gives us perspective. Poetry gives us connection. Poetry allows us the opportunity to get in touch with our feelings and emotions. And I think on a deeper level, sometimes than just speaking or just writing, like when you write something and then you write it and it becomes a poem and you capture the rhythm of that moment and all the emotion that goes with it, and then you share that, that's hugely beneficial. I think it enhances our humanity. It enhances our connectedness as human beings. Yeah. I think it gives, for me personally, it gives me courage. It gives me optimism. It gives me hope, because it's something that transcends everything else. To me, poetry is a universal thing. And so when you can be a part of that, and when you can tap into that in whatever way you do, you're tapping into something that is above the troubles and the problems and the mundane parts of life. And it's really a liberating thing. It gives you strength. It gives us so much. I think it's essential.
Great. I love that answer. If you just tuned in tonight, you are with Art Waves here on 101.5 The Hawk. I'm Bernadette Rule, and my guest tonight is the writer and singer and artist, etc., Leo Dragtoe. That's Dragtoe, all one word, if you are trying to look him up and find more of his music or his poetry. Leo Dragtoe, do you have favorite poets yourself?
I do. I love Leonard Cohen, obviously. I love W.B. Yeats. I love a lot of Yeats. A lot of his poetry is great. Who else do I like? A lot of my favorite poets are also musicians.
Okay.
So I'm a big fan, for example, of Bob Dylan, because
yes,
he's very poetical, and his work has a lot to do with words. So those are kind of, I love Dylan Thomas as well. I think he's a great poet.
Yeah.
There's a local poet, her name is Roxana Bennett, who I really think is great. She actually was involved with the Hamilton Arts and Letters, the same issue that I was involved in, and I think she's an amazing poet. We have a lot of amazing poets around.
Yeah.
But Anna stands out for me as somebody that's very, very good.
Okay, great. Good stuff. So we talked about the difference between singing and song or songwriting and poetry writing. I was going to ask you to sing some of your stuff, but you said you've given me a track to close the program with. So we'll go with that. So I was also going to ask you about favorite singers or lyricists, but of course you've mentioned Bob Dylan and you've mentioned Leonard Cohen as poets and as lyricists. So I can see that this area where the two merge is very important for you. You even mentioned when you were talking about your mentors, your mom and going to church with her and listening to the hymns. And again, there's that merging between music and poetry and I think prayer. I would throw prayer in there too. I think all of those things are very close siblings, you know. Okay, so your bio also mentions that you are an artist. Now, does that refer to your writing and singing, or do you do visual art as well?
Well, that's a little bit of both there. I feel that writing and working with words is art. I also do visual art. Not very much of it, and I've got like 3 or 4 pieces that I've done that I'm working at, and it's another venture that I'm slowly getting into.
What format does it take? Like, are you painting watercolor? Are you doing collage? How does it work?
Well, I like to paint. I also love photography. I love taking pictures and that kind of thing. So I guess that's another form for me. That's another form of visual art. So yeah, I've got a lot of things on the go.
You certainly do. Now, we talked about the importance of poetry and why poetry. Do you ever write in prose or any other genre of literature?
Yes. I've got this novella that I've been working on for like 10 years and it's slow but steady. So yeah, I do. I have written and I do sort of sometimes experiment with sort of literature. I'm a big D.H. Lawrence fan. I love his style of writing. And I feel, again, that for me, the distinction between literature and poetry, I think if literature is powerful enough, it's hard to tell where the poetry ends and the literature begins, you know? So that's what I feel, or the prose, I would say, I guess is a better word for it. But yeah, so I have written prose. I've written some short stories, about, I'd say, 6 or 7. And I'm also working on a novella, so.
Okay, and do you ever send these things out to be published in magazines, literary magazines?
Not yet.
You gotta get over this.
And you I know.
I mean, I say this to you as somebody who got 2 rejections just this week, but it's just, you have to do it. And when you do it, my advice is have the next place ready. So when it comes back, not if it comes back, when it comes back, you know where it's going next. It's the only way to keep your head above water with all that rejection. It is a hard thing. But as you say, sharing your work is very important. So please start sending it out. Leo Dragtoe, were you born in Hamilton?
Yes.
Okay, so it's home to you in every sense of the word then.
Well, yeah, I was born here, but then actually I spent most of my life away from here. I've lived all over Ontario. I spent most of my formative years in Mississauga, and I moved back here a while ago, like I would say, what, like 15 years ago now? And mm-hmm. I love it. It's funny, when I was in Mississauga, like, I've always been a Ticat fan, so I used to come, even when I was younger, to Ticat games in Hamilton, and I loved Hamilton. I've always loved the feeling of the city. I've loved just the way it looks and the way it feels, and I used to always want to be back here, you know, but things just never worked out until about 15 years ago, and then I got the opportunity to move back here with my mom, and so I'm back, and I'm here to stay, and I love Hamilton very dearly. I'm very proud of it, and I think it's a great spot. I love the people here. I love the art here. I love the nature here. It's so interesting because it's such a city, but it also has so much in terms of the natural attributes of it and the waterfalls and the trails. It's such a beautiful spot. I could gush about it for hours.
Yeah, I think anybody who spends much time here gets to that point. Even if we start out not being a believer, it really has got remarkable parks, remarkable ways to get to the wild in 5 minutes, wherever you are. And that escarpment is it's simply remarkable. It's a remarkable thing. Not only does it give us the waterfalls, but the beauty of the escarpment itself and, you know, the way the light plays on it and everything. It really is a wonderful place. I agree. Now, I'm assuming that Leo Dragtoe is a pen name or a stage name. That's correct, right?
No. Yes and no, I will say.
Okay.
So again, this has been a process that's been happening over a long period of time. So it was a pen name, but I have legally changed my name. So it is now Leo Dragtoe legally. Yeah.
Oh, okay. What does that do for you? What does it do for you to have that extra level between you and the audience?
The name change, I feel, has given me more direction. Like, now I know where I'm going, and I know sort of, I feel that the name I have now, Leo Dragtoe, is the best possible way that I can indicate myself to the world and also to myself. I feel very at home in it. And so it gives me a great deal in terms of just direction. Just like, I know where I'm going now. I know who I am and I know what I'm doing. And so before, when it was just a stage name, it was, I thought, oh, this is great. This is fantastic. You know, I really thought it was fun. And people started referring to me by that name. And then I started referring to myself by that name. And I thought, well, this is silly. Why not just adopt this name that I've really grown into, and it means a lot to me, and it feels right and it sounds right. And so I went with it.
Okay. Did you come to the name, or did somebody suggest it to you? How did you come up with Dragtoe?
Okay. So the Leo part, that was a bit of a subtle tribute again to like Leonard Cohen. I've always loved the name Leonard and Leo and Leon and all those kind of names. And so I was trying to think, well, I don't want to be Leonard, you know, that'll be a little much. So because I love him, but I don't want to, you know, imitate him exactly. So the name Leo came up. I also love Leon Russell, is one of my favorite.
Oh,
I've got a whole bunch. And then Dragtoe was just something that I wanted to, because, you know, I have a disability and I do drag my feet. And I wanted to get that out there, and I wanted to put that in the forefront, and I didn't want to be ashamed of that, and I wanted that to be something that people understood was a part of me. So that's kind of how the name happened. I also think it's really interesting when names actually have a meaning. So the name Dragtoe, actually, you know, if you say it, it means something. It's like a significant thing, you know, instead of just a name that's just mundane. It's like it has another layer of meaning and importance. And I think it sounds funky too, so, you know.
It does. And I really admire you for taking your name into your own hands. I would love to change my name, but I've just never been able to do it, you know. It's just one of those things. But I have known people who've done it, and it seems to be an empowering thing.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah, cool. Okay, Leo Dragtoe, weird question for you. If you could time travel to anywhere at any point in the past for just one day, where would you like to have been and why?
Tobago in 1960 underneath a mango tree.
Why Tobago in 1960?
Well, because 1960 was an interesting year, so I'm told. But the reason I would say Tobago in 1960 under a mango tree, see, I love the sun. I love the sun and I need the sun. To me, the sun is very important. And I'm actually a Leo moon in terms of my horoscope. So I do actually have some Leo that's kind of been latent and it's coming to the forefront. So I'm very much in love with the sun. I always have been. And I love the feel of the Caribbean. And I've always just wanted to sit underneath a mango tree for a day. I think that would be a great way to pass some time. So yeah, 1960 Tobago mango tree.
Well, that is one of the most interesting answers to that question that I've ever had. It just cracks me up. All right, Leo Dragtoe, can you read us another poem?
Actually, yes. And this one is, I will recite it for you. It's okay. A lyric. It began as a poem, but it's become a lyric. And it's one of the songs off my album, Alive at Zyla's, and it's called Orchids. And I'm very, very proud of it. So I wanted to recite that now. So here goes. This is Orchids. Nothing we say can ever be mended. Baby, get yourself some sun. Blues in this life cannot be transcended. Sorrow falls to everyone. Over desire, under the bridge, the sound of your voice, the tattoo of your kiss. Orchids are blooming again in the spring. Orchids are blooming, my love. I wanted to see you and keep it together. Baby, we were on the run. I wanted to tell you the things I'd been missing and hold you close beneath the sun. But the tides are still rolling, pulling apart. Bridges are broken from here to your heart. Orchids are blooming again in the spring. Orchids are blooming, my love.
Wow, Leo Dragto, I got to get this album. That's beautiful. Bridges are broken from here to your heart. The tattoo of your kiss. Beautiful.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Oh, that's wonderful. Well, I'm really happy to be able to tell our listeners that we're going to close with a piece of your music tonight. We're going to close Art Waves with a song that you brought for us. And can you just set that up for us and tell us about it, please?
Absolutely. It's a song called Little Insomniac. It's a love song about not being able to sleep. And I think we've all kind of gone through some of that recently. My good friend Mike AM is helping out on ukulele, and it was a demo that we just recorded, and it sounded great. And I love the sort of the lilt of the song. I think it's very fun and playful and enjoyable. I love it, so I hope you do too.
Well, we're going to close with that one tonight. I have to tell you, Art Waves listeners, that when I first heard the song, I just assumed that it was a Randy Newman song. I thought this was Randy Newman singing, which you'll understand why I thought that when you hear it. And I was absolutely amazed when I learned that this was not only sung by and played by, but written by my guest tonight, Leo Dragto. It's a wonderful piece. So, Leo, do you have any final thoughts for our listeners? Any advice? Anything at all?
Well, I'd just like to say, keep breathing. And please check me out. Google Leo Dragto. And check out the music. Alive at Silas is the album. You can get that anywhere you can possibly stream music. And other than that, you know, love each other and keep writing and keep feeling and keep breathing and we'll be all right.
Wonderful advice, and just so lovely to have you on the program tonight, Leo Dragto. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Bernadette.
Okay, so you know that we're going to close with Little Insomniac, which is a song which is on the first album that Leo Dragto has put out.
Actually, no, it's not. It's not on the album. This is a demo. This is, yeah, but it's also like a first. It's like a premiere.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, so Art Waves listeners, you are privileged to hear this before anybody else. You're right. This is a wonderful thing. It also means that you have more music coming, so maybe it'll be on your second album.
There you go.
And we have Orchids to look forward to on the first one, as well as eight other pieces. So, yeah, fantastic. All right, well, Leo Dragto, again, thank you for being here. And I thank our listeners for tuning in. It's always such an important thing to know that you're out there. It affects our conversation, and we're very grateful to you for tuning in. Remember that you can hear all past programs of Art Waves if you go to archive.org/details/artwaves. And you can hear everything that we've done since 2008 on Art Waves there, and some amazing interviews. Including this one, which will be up in 24 hours there. So thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you can join me next week for Art Waves again on 101.5 The Hawk at 7 p.m. And until then, this is Bernadette Rule wishing you a good night on the shores of Lake Ontario.
I'm a little insomniac, hypochondriac. And every time my heart breaks down, it's always over you. Don't you know I'm a little